You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances and save an additional $1,000 when you buy four select LG major appliances. Plus, get a free DeWalt 20-volt max 5-amp-hour battery when you buy a select DeWalt 20-volt max tool. Get the job done for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/26. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for more details and qualifying items.
Welcome back to Between Pages and Friends, a book club podcast hosted by Con and Lauren, two besties who read a lot of books, and John and Kyle, their supportive gamer husbands who've agreed to read with them. I'm John.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Con. Welcome to episode 11 of our Throne of Glass book club. In this episode, we are discussing Heir of Fire, chapters 36 to 53. This is a book club style podcast, meaning it is a safe space to process what you're reading without any spoilers for future chapters or books. Additionally, this is your mild content warning, as we will be discussing themes from this book that include creepy skinwalkers and giant spiders. I'm sorry, Lauren.
If you're dying to discuss these episodes with us and an amazing community of other book lovers, check out our Patreon. You can join our Discord for $5 a month in the Snack Court tier, where we have dedicated forums for each episode of the podcast. The Snack Court also includes some other fun benefits and perks. But if you want early access to new episodes, merch discounts, monthly book club, and more, you gotta join the Patreon Book Club for $10 a month. Patreon's linked in the show notes or description box below.
Lastly, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening. Writing a review and sharing with a friend is really the best way to help support the show and help us grow. Here is a recent review from Apple Podcasts from SamAnna08. She wrote, "Go off, queen! It's such a great podcast. I am a big ACOTAR fan and started reading Throne of Glass in anticipation of the Between Pages and Friends pod. They did not disappoint. I'm so glad I began TOG with the book club to relive a phenomenal series. Nothing is better than exploring the books and laughing along with this crew." That is so fun. Thank you so much, Sam. I just love it. We're turning it over to Connor with the pronunciation guide.
Here we go. This is Heir of Fire, chapters 36 to 53, new names and locations mentioned. First up, we have Keely, which is the name of Petra's wyvern, who gave Abraxos a goat's leg. So cute. Not cute is General Narok leading the surprise attack on Mistward. We have... Well, he's not.
Smooth transition.
I think she even says in this chapter section, like, he was not beautiful.
Yeah.
Something like that. Then we have Beltane, a spring holiday celebrating the planting of the fields. Karanam, a rare power-sharing bond between Fae. Goldrin, the name of Selena's sword that Rowan found in the cave, which was apparently formerly wielded by Athril, beloved of the Dark Queen, and Brennan of the Wildfire. Lastly, we meet more of Rowan's cadre, Vaughn, Gavriel, and Lorcan. Over to you, Juan.
Thanks, Quan. Now, buckle up, people. We kick off chapter 36 with Adian and Rin, and we get a little bit of Rin's backstory here. Adian and Kale devise a plan in a tavern full of soldiers to end up chatting with a soldier from Nol, which is one of the site of the Three Towers. The soldier confirms that the Blackstone Tower is there, as well as some of the side effects of soldiers compared to what they know of the Blackstone and the rings that they have heard of. Manon is still under pressure to get Abraxos to fly, so she makes a little visit to a Stygian spider to get some spider silk for his wings. In a startling turn of events, Manon tricks the spider and has Abraxos whipping them off the cliff. Before that, though, in their conversation, we learn that this is the same spider that bargained 20 years for that merchant that Selena met in the Red Desert, who we find out is also a shapeshifter. There's also mention of the Wastes, a High King and a redhead that killed him and took his place as queen. Iskra whips Abraxos and Manon goes off on her emotions indeed. Am I right? We find out that Selena did know and hear about Adian in her time growing up and things. I know that was a question in the last podcast. Selena and Rowan are starting to get surprisingly real with each other since they made their little promise. They chat a little bit about each other's families. Murtaugh returns from the Dead Islands and confirms that Rolf is the pirate lord and Narok has gone. Apparently, there are monsters being made on the island somewhere. Rolf recalls him and his men seeing one with a black collar on one of the islands. And apparently, Narok has left the islands and launched a surprise attack on Windlin, where, as we know, Selena currently is. They determine that the king's surprises, these monsters included, are most likely also located elsewhere, not just the islands. Adian calls out Kale for his lack of loyalty to, well, anything, trying to please all sides and keep his promises. Just ain't gonna work, buddy. Beltane is happening, which is the spring festival. As a test, Rowan tasks Selena to keep some fires burning during it. You know, don't set anybody aflame sort of thing. She gets a little taken away by the music, gets lost in her thoughts, and she almost burns out in her power. In the aftermath, cooling her down, Rowan finally sees all the scars on her back. Once that chaos dies down, Selena ends up telling Rowan pretty much the whole story. Her years in Rifthold and Dovir, going to the Red Desert, Sam, as well as the whole competition. We also learn about the Karanam here, a rare bond where a fae can yield their well of power to another. It's also starting to become clear at this point that there's some kind of relationship forming between Rowan and Selena. Shortly afterwards, Rowan has her making shields of fire, and she's starting to go practice magic out on her own. We see a little bit of a mindset shift here with her. Manon and Abraxos make the crossing. Yes, yes, finally, finally, it's about time with some new spider silky wings. Back to Rowan and Selena, they catch another trail for a monster and track it back to some coastline where they find 200 soldiers and three of those monsters hidden in a cave. Led by Narok, he is also there. Through all this, they determine that the dead bodies that they've been finding are most likely experiments to see which Demi-Fae are compatible as hosts for these monsters. Selena and Rowan come across one of the creatures in the woods as they're going back to Mistward, and he has a black collar on. When they're trying to escape, it eventually gets a hold of Selena, but Rowan saves the day. They run, and to kind of get rid of him, they lure out a group of skinwalkers. Rowan and Selena like lead them right toward each other, get up in a tree to get away from him. Based on the sounds, the skinwalkers win, kill the creature. They ready Mistward for the coming attack. Selena tells Rowan that Maeve doesn't deserve him, and she silently wishes that she would not leave the island alone.
Aww.
News hits Mistward of Calicola as we learn that the king also took out everyone in Endovir. Selena is obviously wrecked by this news. Back in Rifthold, the king of kind of officially announces to the court that of what happened in Calicola and Endovir. Dorian and Kale are beside themselves. Dorian tries to use this to get Sorsha out, but she says that she's staying with him.
Aww.
And then at the Royal Theater that night, the orchestra plays the songs of the lands whose people were slaves in the camps. The next morning, theater was shut down. No one ever saw the conductor and the members of the orchestra ever again. Pretty crazy. Devastating events, but a robust opportunity for up-and-coming musicians in Rifthold.
Oh, my God.
Too soon?
Jonathan.
Musicians wanted.
Too soon?
Okay. That's depressing.
Someone out there is finally.
Get my chance.
It's my chance.
All right. We learn that Rowan sent out a call for aid to his cadre. The assault comes earlier than expected, leading Rowan to believe that they were betrayed by someone. The three creatures show up from the woods, three. So unfortunately, the skinwalkers didn't kill the creature. At the same time, the soldiers show up in the secret passage in Mistward, confirming a betrayal. Aelin walks out of the barrier to meet the darkness while Rowan heads inside to fend off the attacking soldiers. She fights the three creatures. They recognize her new sword, Goldrin, they call it, as it warms and sings with her power. And through recognition of the sword and their questions of how she's able to wield it, Aelin actually figures out that these creatures are Vog. Oh my God. And what's this? Giant, ferocious animals coming out of the woods? Oh, damn, it's a cadre. A towering man, a massive bird, and three of the largest predators she's ever seen. Sick. Rowan makes it outside to see the darkness consume Aelin. It takes her through her worst and most terrifying memories, gets to the bottom of the darkness as the three Vog princes slam into the frozen river at the bottom of her soul. And that's where we stopped.
Oh my God, that's the worst place to stop.
I'm so sorry.
Or is it the best place to stop?
It's a great place to get reactions, though, right? Reactions.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. This chapter section was indeed pretty cray-cray. Let's kick it off with chapter 36.
In chapter 36, my first note... was freaking
boo.
Kale
boo.
Saying that boo Kale.
Boo. I just wrote, don't be dumb, Kale.
Exactly. Nice. Exactly. I was booing Kale here in my Kindle notes because he's thinking in his internal monologue that he's afraid of what Aelin and Adian would do to his kingdom. And I quote, because this was still his kingdom. He was working for Dorian, not Aelin, not Adian. So and he didn't know where all of this put him. Boo. That's all I got.
I struggle with it because I just loved him so much. And so I keep just like trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think every time like Selena brings up Kale again in these chapters, I'm like, oh, because she still loves him. I don't know where I feel about Kale right now. So I want to be annoyed, but at the same time,
I am annoyed with him right now.
I mean, you said you loved him past tense. So I think you've made your decision there.
Well, ooh. I think Selena right now loved him past tense. And so I'm just kind of going with that.
Yeah.
But she's also where I'm feeling, where like sometimes she thinks about him and has feelings, and other times we forget he exists.
You think about other guys?
I have comments about this later, but
what do you mean, Kyle? Okay.
You said you're related to her because sometimes she thinks about him.
No.
And I was just picturing you like in bed, falling asleep, like, Kale. Sometimes I just think about him.
I meant for Selena on my side. Yeah. Oh my God. Uh-huh.
Right.
But yes, I don't know. So I'm struggling with that. In this chapter, this is where they start learning about like all the towers. Because the last chapter chunk, we learned about like the spells. And I think that led them to these three
the
towers.
Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah. And is that what people call it? Or did you just say that?
No, it's just what I keep thinking of.
I didn't know if I was learning like an insider Throne of Glass joke.
I don't think so. Maybe.
We'll start it if it's not. Anyway, obviously I only know about the future books is the titles of the books. And so this is my guess is maybe this is why one is called Tower of Dawn. Because there's the towers, but that's a way, way far down the line. At the very end, like the very last line of this chapter was Kale again talking, and it just said, which meant he needed Dorian. And I was like, yes, freaking last podcast, I was like so worried for Dorian that he was like on a precipice of like turning evil or like being on team good guys. I'm just really glad that like somebody's talking to him and maybe he can be part of the team because I want
team
him
assassins.
To be a good guy. Exactly.
Team ass.
That's our next merch.
T-E-A-M. A-S-S. Team ass. Team ass. Team ass. Sorry. It just came to me. I had to do it.
If that is our next
we can cut that
just
out.
Needs to be on those like shorts where it's across the butt.
I'd wear those.
Yeah.
Team ass. I'd wear them. Absolutely.
Get on it, Connor.
100% I would wear those to the gym.
Oh. As I was thinking, like gym clothes. Gym. Would totally be gym. The people know what you're working on that day.
Exactly.
Wearing every leg day. It's not leg day.
Anyway.
I'm on it.
Chapter 37. So this is when they go to find the spider silk and the legendary Stygian spiders, large as horses and deadlier than poisons, who wove it. So first of all, just know. That's it.
How'd you do with this one?
How'd you fare with these?
Did you cry?
No, I didn't cry. Honestly, like leading up to it, her description of flying over the trees that had like spider webs all in it, like regular spider webs and all the spiders that she saw, that was kind of creepy. But when she actually meets the real spiders, they just like talked like normal. It wasn't super descriptive in a creepy way. Like it was more just like a regular terrifying, not because it was a spider.
Pretty generic.
Yeah. And even how they're like, go get the stuff. And they're like, okay. And they just like walk away and then come back with it. And it just felt very normal. Like, so that was okay. That was okay for me. I will say, I'm really glad we read Assassin's Blade before this moment though, because like the only thing you get in lead up to it was one of the random people she was getting Abraxos from saying like, be careful and think through any bargain they offer you. And that's all you know.
Yeah.
So like reading that without knowing that guy bargained his whole life and like he's actually 20 years older and like it was way dangerous. It felt much more anticipation and stress and nervous going into it than she was just going to see some random spiders, because this would have been the first time you hear about it and it'd be like, okay, like whatever. So I am really glad about that. I will say though, because in the podcast I did say I would want a content warning before we got there. So Connor did text me and she was like, hey, so remember that time you wanted a content warning? And I just went, no, dang it. And I didn't want the chapter number. I just wanted to like be prepared that it was coming. But since I knew that, my thought was that it would end up being like Maeve and she was going to be like a Black Widow spider or something. Like that's where I thought it was going. Because so far in this book, we hadn't heard about Stygian spiders anywhere except for in Assassin's Blade. Right now, honestly, I'm glad I was wrong. And I didn't have to see that today, but maybe it's still a thing.
I thought that was so interesting, though, because that was not something that had ever occurred to me. But like after you said that, I remember you calling out when we first meet Maeve and you were saying that they kept describing like her spider smile or something like
Her spider-like smile and that kind of
stuff. So I was like, oh, that totally makes sense that you would have thought that. But that like had never occurred to me.
When you were describing how all the spiders were in the trees or whatever, I did think, because it said like any kind of spider you could think of from all over the world, I saw them here. And all I could think was like, this is like a nice vacay for these spiders. I only imagine they're with their little spider fans like, you know, let's take a vacation for a week, go to the Stygian lands. We'll go to the where all the spiders hang out. Either that or some random explorer someday coming up to the spot and being like, why is every spider in the world here?
It's the Daytona Beach for spiders.
Yeah.
They got tons of webs.
It's tourist season. Yeah, all the Stygian spiders are like, gosh, these trees are so full this time of year.
It's like when because we're here in Branson, it's like that in the summer.
Yeah.
I will say too, like her standing there and like the little ones like crawling up her legs and her trying to like bat them off. That was really creepy. Just like the little spiders, but.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, they were definitely a lot less creepy than I expected them to be. Like you said, how they were described and how they talked pretty normally, you know, they were fairly chill. It didn't seem like they were necessarily trying to get her into a bad deal. They were just talking to her, like, whatever you offer, you know.
What I did find creepy was this part where the spider's telling Manon about the merchant that she met. She said, when he sold me 20 years of his life, some of his gifts passed to me. I can't use them, of course, but I do wonder what it would be like to see the world through your pretty eyes, to touch a human man. What?
That is gross.
I do not remember reading that before. I was like, excuse me?
I kind of thought it was weird. Like, the other spiders not find it odd that this one craves this outer species intimacy? Like, as a giant spider, why do you find humans attractive? Where the other ones are like, oh, that's kind of weird, but maybe they don't king shame. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, if she got some of his powers, maybe she got some of his, like, emotions or thoughts or
memories or something like that.
So does that mean he was gay?
I was just thinking that. Maybe.
He's a shapeshifter, so you know, who knows? He could have all sorts of preferences. Yeah. Just change into whatever he wants. And
honestly, that's a good point, though, like that he was there as an old man, but he's a shapeshifter. Like, couldn't he just make himself look young, even though...
Oh, but there's no magic.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. My bad. Does he know he's a shapeshifter? If he was born without magic?
Well, and it made me wonder, like, does she say she can't use his gifts because there's no magic and she actually could if there was magic? Or she just can't use them
because
she's a spider? But then
is she not some sort of magical creature? Like
making deals and stuff? Isn't that feel magical?
Yeah, maybe
definitely. Take his life.
Yeah. And
maybe not being a giant spider with really strong silk. I could see that passing as some sort of weird natural thing, but definitely magic deals.
I don't remember on the map if they're within the Bermuda Triangle or not.
Magic zone.
Yeah. But I'm assuming they are, if that's where, like, Manon was in, like, the gap.
Yeah, line. I would think well, she
had to fly there, though, too.
That is interesting about the deals thing. Because, like, that's clearly, like, some kind of magic. Like, how would you categorize that? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, especially if they just, like, say with their words, like, I will give you this and you will give me that. Like, some sort of something has to happen in between those two things. I will say, while she's researching, that, like, that adventurer guy probably walked there to the spiders amongst all of the Daytona Beach worth of spiders that were there. Is way creepier than her just, like, flying in.
Yeah.
Like, she was there for, like, minutes. I don't even know. But he probably spent, like, weeks and months traveling and whatever else there and back.
It also makes me curious as to when he got it, if he got it before magic.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like if he went in as a human, I would have been very surprised if he didn't get eaten.
Oh, you mean maybe he shapeshifted before?
Yeah.
And that's also how she knew he was a shifter.
Would he have been able to communicate, though?
I don't know.
Maybe.
I mean she's a talking spider, so.
That's true. Anything's possible.
That's kind of an interesting thought. Like, wonder how long he's had that spider silk.
Because I don't think, like when Rowan is like a bird, can he talk? I don't think he can.
No.
Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, so I have the map pulled up, but I suddenly feel like I've never looked at it before. There's the gap.
Have you?
Let me see if I can pull it up.
It's like, it's just blurry. Like, I found a map that has the triangle drawn on it. Shout out to Reddit. That's nice. But
shout out to Reddit. I don't know if you guys have heard of this up and coming website.
Hey, we have an account now, so we're cool.
We have a Reddit?
Yeah.
We do now. Yeah, I posted in there yesterday.
Khan made that the Guide to Witches and Air of Fire, everybody. If you haven't seen it, go on our social medias or Reddit to buy Khan's Guide to Witches from Air of Fire, spoiler free.
The gap, the Farian gap, is kind of on the line. If she went north, then there should be magic there. But if she went south, probably not. But I don't remember where she flew. So anyway, that's not super important to this conversation, but I'm just curious.
So yeah, so then she's there talking to the spider. She's making the deal, whatever. And then, like, just reading, thinking, oh gosh, what is she going to give? And how is this going to work and affect her whole life and whatever? And then out of nowhere, it says, the spiders now standing along the cliff's edge didn't even have time to move as Braxos' tail unwound like a whip and slammed into them. They went flying into the ravine, shrieking. Manon didn't waste a second as she stuffed the remaining yards of silk in her empty saddlebags. She mounted Abraxas and they leapt into the air. The cliff, the perfect takeoff spot, just as she had planned. The perfect traps for those foolish ancient monsters. So first of all, go off, Abraxas.
Yeah.
Epic. The whole plan, Manon, whoever came up with the plan, everything great. Abraxas, wonderful. But like John said in the recap that like... they died or that guy got his life back, but I think they're still alive. That was my assumption. And that they're just like super pissed off now and are going to come and get her or something. Like that was where I thought it was going.
I guess technically we don't know.
Yeah. That's where I thought it was going.
I just assumed.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but yeah, it's like later with the Vog guy, how he wasn't dead because of the skinwalkers or whatever. Oh. I had said, like, if it's off screen, if you don't see the body, you don't know. Yeah, and then I was right about that one. Sure. So that's, I guess, where my mind is on this. But I would be okay if they're dead and there's no big spiders in this book anymore. But
you also don't live your whole life as an ancient being on the edge of a cliff and not have, like, a hope we don't fall. Like,
do you think they would have, like, webs or something like a net? I mean, they're
spiders. They just shoot a web at a tree. They can Spider-Man out of there.
Yeah,
they should be fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, totally so that fine. Means they're just going to be pissed off that someone stole 10 yards of their spider silk and come after them.
Yeah,
that's what I thought was going to happen.
That's the other thing because did it say how much she had sold, the spider had sold to the merchant guy and it cost him 20 years? And it was like, I feel like it wasn't nearly 10
yards. It was just like a
10
yard or something.
I think it was like a yard.
Yeah. Yeah. Like 1 yard would have cost 20 years. So like, that is wild to me that she just took off with it.
Which also, like, he said that he got it. specifically to sell it, correct? Like he got it, brought it to the market and was like, ooh, it's this rare silk, I'll sell you. I really don't know how anyone could be like, 20 years of my life, 1 yard of this fabric, and I'll make enough money. Like you could have probably spent 20 years just making the money without instantly aging and having a yard of silk that maybe nobody ever buy.
Yeah. Especially if he's just giving out little bits to girls who come up.
He runs out of samples. Oh, dang it. I knew I should have stopped giving out samples. Right.
Someone from Instagram commented on us saying that they laughed at the way we pronounced Manon, and because she's Manon, French and they don't say like the hard N. So it's like Manon. And so that's how I've been saying it now. And I just wanted to put, exactly. I just thought it was cute. So that's how I pronounce her name now.
Je m'appelle Carol Westfall.
Yes.
All right. Speaking of Abraxos, chapter 38, I highlighted the part that said Abraxos's wings now shimmered in a certain light. And I put, these are the wings of a killer, Bella.
I cracked up when I read that the first time. Oh, it's so good.
What's that from?
You made me watch all of the Twilight movies. What do you mean? What's that from?
Oh, that's Twilight.
SpongeBob. Why is SpongeBob your go-to? That's the second time that's happened.
Yeah, it's always my go-to.
Yeah, anytime I quote anything that he doesn't recognize, he just assumes it's from SpongeBob because I do quote SpongeBob a lot and he's never seen it.
I'd pay good money for a SpongeBob version of Twilight.
That would be hilarious.
He doesn't say wings in his, is the skin.
It's this is the skin of a killer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The first time he sees her.
Oh.
Sees him.
She sees him glittering.
I must have put it out of my mind or something. I don't know.
I don't know how you could.
Same.
Hang on tight, spider monkey.
Okay. We're going to Daytona Beach.
Were there spider monkeys in this forest? Is it a technicality or do you have to be an arachnid to get close to the Stygians and hang out?
Okay. And then they come back to, I don't know, wherever they keep Abraxos and the rest of the wyvern. And she's talking to Petra, who, Connor, you said it was like so cute that she brought her the goat's leg. I thought that was adorable.
It was cute.
I know, me too. They were trying to be friends. But Petra said, doesn't your wyvern talk to you? Manon said they don't talk. Petra shrugged, tapping her hand casually over her heart. Don't they? That just felt like a bless your heart. Don't they? That's what that felt like to me.
I didn't catch the part that she had her hand over her heart when she said
yes,
that.
Yes. Bless your soul.
Protect your soul.
I just thought it was important to point out because obviously her and Abraxos are like having some sort of communication. They're making plans together to attack the spiders and like whatever else they're doing, but they haven't actually talked yet. And then it's interesting that other wyvern are talking to their people already, or at least Petra is saying so. I'm interested to see how that will play out. Chapter 39. Rowan was burned whenever Selena and him were fighting, and she like burned his wrist and burned off of his tattoo. And so she was helping him like get his tattoo back. And I just really appreciated this moment from Sarah to have this explanation to us people who overthink things like myself. And it said, with his immortal, fast healing body, Rowan's ink was mixed with salt and powder iron to keep the magic in his blood from wiping away any trace of the tattoo. So I had wondered, like, how does a tattoo even stick? And, like, he's sitting there acting like it hurts and he's bleeding. But other times he's hurt and he's bleeding and it all heals. So I just appreciated this one line to clear it all up for me.
Me too. I wrote that I feel like we don't get often those little lore-infused explanations in the book. So this was nice. Like, I sort of pictured her writing it being like, oh, he gets tattoos, but he heals real quick. I got to find some way that it makes sense. But also, now that I'm thinking about it, because he said he acted like it doesn't hurt. A, it's a bird that she's tattooing with a needle, so I'm sure that already hurts. And then literally adding salt to the wounds that you're making as you make them cannot be comfortable.
But, no, he definitely acted like it hurt. Like he and like that kind of stuff. Yeah. But yeah, it was just the fact that it wasn't like magically healing, I guess, was cool. Mm-hmm. But the way that the things with iron in the blood and like all of that stuff that is played into the book is just super interesting to me as just like a fantasy concept, I guess.
What's it called? The potion for Dorian. Like, even just drinking extra iron.
The tonic.
Helps. Yeah, the tonic. Yeah.
Yes. His gin and iron tonic.
Gin tonic.
So like she explains this like really cool moment for me and then immediately turns around and like leaves me hanging. But it said, Rowan talking, my parents were very old when they conceived me. I was their only child in the millennia they mated. They faded into the afterworld before I reached my second decade. And then I'm like, but what is the afterworld and how do you just fade away? And like, what does all of that mean? I need to
know. It's right after this one. Coming up next, afterworld, this world, afterworld.
Okay. But like, what is it? So I don't know. I hope we get more into stuff like that too. So.
Well, and then she does in the same chapter, she answers our previous question about wouldn't Selena have heard about Adian in the last 10 years? And then she said she had heard about him and seen his name in papers, which I guess they have papers. I don't think I knew that up to this point.
Yeah, like newspapers, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. And then she says it was by luck or fate or something else entirely that he had never been in the castle when she was there. Because that was something else we had talked about. Like, she was in the castle for quite a while and it was surprising that they hadn't seen each other in passing or whatever in the castle.
Yeah, absolutely. And she was saying that she had seen his name as the skilled general of the king's army and just assumed that he had, probably like anybody else, turned his back on Taryesyn and was serving the king of Otterlin and was tricked by that, which is what Adian was really trying to do, was trying to like play that part. So,
yeah,
I mean, it worked. But yes, I'm like, I cannot wait for this reunion. Hopefully that we see one day of them coming back together and them thinking, you know, that she did all these bad things and didn't care and that he did all these bad things and didn't care, but they both care and they both love each other and it's going to be great. I can't wait. And then I just really love this whole conversation with Rowan, just because she's like finally able to talk about everything. She didn't tell him all the truths, but like she was able to answer questions that literally no one had even asked before. I think it was good for her to just like make an actual friend. Not that the other ones weren't, but they only know so much. I was really happy for her for that. Oh, and then this is the first time she talks to about her plans after defeating the King of Otterlin, and said, not without explaining how one day she didn't know how in the distance she was going to go back to End of Year, free all of them, each and every slave, even if she had to unshackle them all herself. And so at first I was like, go off, queen, do the things, go save those people. And then writing this note, I just really wanted to cry because now we know like what happened. And I don't know. It just,
you know,
I don't know that I have words for that part. So maybe I will later.
I feel like she waffles a little bit here where it feels like she's finally starting to make progress and she's finally starting to care that she lives and that she does all of these things and protects these people. And then we're like right back to square one almost. Like,
yeah,
she just keeps going back and forth. And it's hard to see that here, but that is also just like how it happens in real life too. Like, in order to make progress, you're fighting these mental battles all the time. And so I appreciate the realness of that, but it's also like really hard to watch.
Yeah. And that sometimes things happen and it makes you feel like you go back to square one and have to start over. And yeah, we do see a lot of that with her.
I forget what this is referencing. I highlighted this in the Kindle. So I don't know if it was that they were chatting like in bed or whatever, and they were like holding hands, but it says, but he wouldn't let go of her hand. And I wrote, they in love. They so in love. They don't even know it. Also in that one, we kind of get, I guess, a confession of sorts from Selena, kind of admitting why she's always shied away from going back to Taryesyn, when she says, because if I free Eowe and destroy the king as Selena, I can go anywhere after that. Saying if she finally comes out like in a public manner of who she really is, she goes on to say, the crown, my crown is just another set of shackles, meaning like she has responsibility as Aelin, but as Selena, once she's finished with her business, she can be free to do whatever she wants, which I thought was super interesting.
Like Hannah Montana. She takes off the wig and everyone knows she's Miley Cyrus. There's no going back.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's the climb.
Yeah. It's literally the same.
And hopefully one day she'll get the best of both worlds.
Yeah. She will be also Hannah Montana.
Just add it to the list of names.
Yes. Yeah. But in the same breath as like the lay and lub, like when Rowan says that, he's like, we're not friends. And I'm like, dude, quit. Like, you're lying to yourself. For real. Why would you even say that? Just complete denial statement here.
in my opinion. But.
And on another note, in the same conversation, we just get like such devastating insight from this conversation when Rowan asks Selena why she stayed with Arabin. Mm. And that was part of her kind of admitting like why she didn't want to go by her real name. And again, that's partially more manipulation from Arabin trying to convince her that wasn't the right thing to do and that she needed to pretend to be someone else and hide her identity. That whole like monologue she gives there of her reasoning to Rowan was just devastating. And I felt like it was kind of brave of Rowan to even ask that question and then huge that she answered it. Cause I feel like that's also something that she never would have told anybody else. Yeah.
Well, and then we're like reading all of this and it's very heavy, very dark kind of conversation and things. And then it's like the very end of this little chapter. And it said, a feral smile and he grabbed her by the chin, not hard enough to hurt her, but to get her to look at him. And I was like, okay, hold on. Something's happening here. And I sat up and it said, first thing he breathed, we're not friends. I'm still training you, and that means you're still under my command. And a flicker of hurt must have shown because he leaned in closer, his grip tightening on her jaw. Second, whatever we are, whatever this is, I'm still figuring it out too. So I'm going to give you space. You deserve to sort yourself out, and you can damn well give it to me. She studied him for a moment, their breath mingling. Deal, she said. And I just wrote, I am melting in my hoodie, everyone. It's going to happen.
Rowan Whitethorn.
It was the grabbing of the chin. I was like, sir, calm down. I can't. I know. And just to be like, whatever we are, whatever this is, like, he's like, you know, I feel like they're pointing out like something is happening here beyond us being friends or us training together, but like we're still figuring it out. Let's just like work together. We still got our own crap to figure out, and but they're gonna like do it together, and it's just like, I don't know, I just love
and they're communicating.
I
love open communication.
Well, and it's like she can finally actually have that open communication. I think we struggled a lot with her and Nehemia, or even her and Kale, where she was keeping so many secrets and whatever, but she was literally living a secret, and this is like the first time she can just be herself, and I love it. So
yes. And I love that every time they have a conversation like this, where they're both like being really open and vulnerable, even though what they are discussing is really heavy, they're almost like, oh my gosh, what's the word? Oh, geez. Supportive? Sorry. They're like
supportive. They're encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Go
they're,
on.
They compliment each other.
I'm on the like, edge of my seat.
They're flirting.
They're like opening up.
Oh, okay, opening, yeah.
They're like sharing their burdens with each other is what I'm trying to say.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
They're being vulnerable.
And so, well, I said that, but I just mean like, I think in some other conversations that she's had with other characters, she's always left the conversation feeling worse because she feels guilty that she's still keeping secrets, or she feels guilty that she's like burdening them with her problems. Yeah, but every time she and Rowan have these conversations, like they always end on these really light, kind of flirty, happy moments. Like,
well, now they do.
Yes.
Now they do. They used to punch each other in the face.
Yeah, they used to bite each other and punch each other in the face. But I mean, it seems like there's relief. And we've never really seen her experience. Not that kind of relief, Lauren.
Not yet.
These are young adult books.
And Lauren is now on Sex Watch.
But I heard it doesn't end that way. I've not read it, obviously, but I've heard it doesn't end as a young adult book. So.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and I think a lot of it is Rowan has acted differently than the other people in her life. He has not lied. He's very open and he's very blunt about it. But at least every question she's asked, he has answered. It's never been I can't tell you or you'll learn later or hiding the truth. It's always been like, yeah, here's the answer. And if you don't like it, sucks sort of thing. So, but that openness was enough for her to do the same. She would tell him answers. And if he didn't like it, sucks for him.
Yeah.
But they do like it. So it's working out.
So do I.
Easy.
Speaking of romance in the air, chapter 40, all this romance with Sorsha, I feel like is just exactly what I sort of jokingly said was going to happen to her. And now I feel bad for the joke because I fear it's becoming all too real, where I was like, oh, they're going to kiss. They're going to become really comfortable. They're going to start hanging out and then she's going to die. And I'm like,
It's like, now you've predicted too much. You're like, oh, I know.
What have I done?
I have too much power.
To a book published years ago.
Because it really was just like, we knew next to nothing about them at the beginning. So I was just jokingly saying like, yep, this is going to be it. And she's going to die. But now I'm like, oh, she actually is going to die.
So you do, this is like confirmation for you.
Yeah.
Like,
I still think it's going that way for sure. I just feel worse about it.
Especially with him trying to like get her to leave and then her staying.
Yeah.
Him being that selfish about it. Like that whole back and forth. I was like, oh no, girl, Kyle's going to be right.
Yeah. That really was the thing that settled it, was rejecting his offer to leave, because it's tale as old as time. You know, you try to get the love of your life to leave danger, they don't leave danger, and one of you dies. It's in like so many stories.
Tale as old as time.
I know that's not in this chapter chunk, but there was a lot of times with Dorian in this section that something happened or someone said something and he was like seeing it from their perspective. Like he finally understood why Kale sent Selena away or why people were doing certain things. And I just felt like that was important for him too, because he was kind of having like a, they're leaving me out attitude. I'm just going to go and flirt with this girl. Leave me alone. And maybe now he's like, I don't know, having his own like understanding, he's maturing in that way, I guess, and seeing other people's point of view. So that I felt like was good for Dorian. I also really loved this part with Dorian, and I think it was Crown of Midnight when Holland comes back home and they like have a whole carnival for him. I think that's Crown of Midnight. I was saying in the podcast that I was really worried something would happen to Dorian, because then Holland would become the heir, and then Holland would be just as bad as his dad, if not worse, because Holland seems like the literal worst child ever. And so I appreciated that Dorian seemed to be having these same thoughts and feelings here. I think it was even later that Sorsha says, like, you come with me, we can run away together. But he's like, he understands his duty is to be in the castle, not because he necessarily wants to be or work with his dad or any of that, but it's literally because his dad is the worst and his brother is the worst. And if he's not there, then the world is going to be even worse than it is. I totally called that Holland would be the worst. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, now that it's written down, it makes me nervous that it's like some sort of foreshadowing or something, and Holland will be the king, or I don't know. It, the whole, just now that it's like Sarah also said it, makes me nervous.
We were talking about how she said, oh, let's run away together. And he was like, no, I can't do that. But he did have sort of that inner monologue, how you said he's seeing things from other people's perspectives. And he was thinking about how Kale sent Selena away and how he was like, I understand now why Kale did it, but I still don't think it's right. So that he was like literally begging her to leave, but he would never force her to leave. That was just another example of what you said about him seeing things from other people's perspectives.
Speaking of his whole conversation with Kale, where he like goes off on him for Kale's perspective, and he says, you cannot pick and choose what parts of her to love. I was like, you tell him, Big D. He's like going off. He's going off on Kale. And he says, you do not have the right to wish she were not what she is. The only thing you have a right to do is decide whether you are her enemy or her friend. Go off, queen. Yeah.
Spitting straight facts. I love this
not,
too.
And not just like about, just as like, you know, PSA, this is not just about Dorian and Kale to Selena. This is just how you treat men and women. you don't try to change. Yes. You just got to accept and you got to work with it. And the whole thing is so good.
I love this part too. Like, it was just how I read it. But like, yeah, the body language action comes after what they say. Like, I know that obviously written down, one has to come before the other. He's probably doing it at the same time. But for some reason, I can't help but think that he says it first and then does it. So when he says, you think I wanted any of this to happen? And then he like does it after the fact, just like made me kind of chuckle at that part. And I just had to write it down.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to read the whole quote.
Oh, sorry. So it says, you think I wanted any of this to happen? Kale splayed his arms. So like, I read that in order, in literal order. So he says it and then splays his arms. Like, wait, I mean, he probably did it at the same time, right? But I don't know. It's just one of those things.
Or helped wind it up, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Yeah, so this conversation was so good. I wrote, so he stared down his friend, even though he knew Kale was hurting and adrift, and said, I've already made my decision about her. And when the time comes, regardless of whether you are here or in Aniel, I hope your choice is the same as mine. And I was like, yes, Dorian. Mm-hmm. Yes, all the things. Mm-hmm. And then I am officially like no longer concerned that he's going to maybe be evil. He understands his role, where he needs to be. Yeah. And how he plays in that, including one day, hopefully, he's the king and Aelin is a queen and they can work together to like heal the country and work in that sense. So love it. Love it. I love it.
Go off king.
Is that a thing now? Go off king?
It is in our Discord.
I saw that.
This part is not funny, but I just, every time there's a mention of the Black Rings or something similar now, all I can think of is like the bestie sleepover with the moon rings. So I highlighted the part where it says, it bore a black collar like a pet. And I wrote, I hear bestie necklaces are in the spring.
Yeah. So new accessories for the squad.
But really, though, it sounds really bad. But I just, yeah, because we keep joking about it, I like can't take it seriously. And then also because of Kyle's predictions, this part where it says, Kael run. Kael wondered if Adrian would strike him or kill him. And I wrote, or kiss him, according to Kyle.
Yes, that's right.
It's getting bromantical in here. You never know. They're hanging out a lot at night, going to bars.
That is true. Maybe they're on their own enemies to lovers track over there.
It's just Kael gets like piled on in this chapter. I mean, it comes from Adian too when he says, the fact remains, Captain, that you have not picked a side because you are still a boy and you are still afraid. And I was like, got that right, bro. Like, dude, you need to pick a side already. Like, he's holding on. Kael is holding on so tightly to this loyalty that he's just not loyal to anyone or anything. He's just like trying to please everybody, trying to still make it okay to go back to Aniel. So he's got some like honoring his father, who's a total douche. So like Selena's already gone. Just don't go through with it. Like, I don't know. Like, who cares? She's left already. You got what you wanted. I feel like his father would almost be like, he knows how to play the game. He'd almost like respect that decision over him actually going to Aniel. And
that's a great point.
And then Kale's just like a big turd the entire time in Aniel because he just doesn't want to be there. And he's just like, I'm here, aren't I? Like, you know what I mean? Anyway.
Well, yeah, the rest of that quote too says, your prince has moved on, my queen has moved on, but you have not, and it will cost you in the end.
Yep.
Kael had nothing to say and quickly left the apartment. He hardly slept that night, hardly did anything but stare at his sword. And so at that moment, I was like, okay, well, maybe finally something will happen.
Yeah.
He will like turn around and do it. But then it ends with the last sentence that said, and when the sun rose up, he went to the king and told him of his plan to return to Aniel. And I was like, what the freak? That was an epic speech, Kael. Just take it. Like, that was what you needed. I feel like, if anything, it's almost like a pride thing at this point. Like, he's decided he's doing this and no one is deterring him. And if he decides he's not, then he has to say that he was wrong. You know, if he has to say the king is a bad guy, then he was wrong to do his whole life that way or whatever it is. And it's almost like a pride thing that he won't let go of, you know, like, and accept that he's made a mistake in some way. It's really what it feels like. And it's going to be a big thing.
So. I think it has a lot to do with his father and like this weird process of breaking the promise that he made to go back to Aniel. Even though if he didn't, his father would probably give him a bunch of crap for it. But ultimately, I don't think he would care. Kind of like what I said. Like, but he's, it's just this weird, like, he wants to prove to his father that he's this honorable man who left his family to become like go into the royal guard or whatever. And he's just like stuck on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, his father's not an honorable man.
Right.
Yeah. From what it sounds like, I don't know why he holds his dad's opinion of him so highly or I don't know, but I don't know what the consequence did they explain earlier what the consequences would be if he didn't show up?
I mean, not really.
It doesn't really sound like
his mom would be upset.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Which, I mean, don't make your mom upset, but like,
You've already been gone for so many years.
I know. And if it's a matter of like that and, you know, people's lives and whatever else. Yeah. Like,
right. Exactly.
I feel like so silly. Yeah, you got to understand the line. Chapter 41. This is when they go to the little party and Selena has to like keep the fires going. That whole moment with Rowan, she's talking about how she thought people had maybe looked at her, but they like quickly look away because Rowan is right there. And I thought that was cute. But then it said, though she did catch a few females looking at him with far warmer interest, she wanted to claw their faces off for it.
That's right. Because they in love.
Well, and they just like keep denying it too. Like, we're just friends. There's it's nothing like, romantic here. But then this happens. Like, yeah. Okay.
Come on.
It's going to happen. And like when we started this book, somebody said something about him. I don't remember what it was. And I was like, you think they're going to get together? Like, it's going to be, you really think so? But yes, now I think they will too. So it's going to happen. Anyways, so she's having the fires and she's keeping them going. And that whole description was really cool. But then it starts like bringing in the musical aspect of it and how like the music was like moving her and how it like connected with her magic. And like that whole however many paragraphs was just really cool to me being a music person. I don't know if that's just like everybody thought it was cool or maybe because my whole life is like doing music all day. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like I just love to see it. I love to see it. I think it's really neat.
Yeah, I loved that. I also loved when she was like on the verge of burnout from keeping those fires going for so long. And she thinks she did not want to die like this. She took another breath. This like made me so emotional because this, like I said, she does go back and forth a lot in this section, but I feel like this is the first time in this book that she isn't just immediately surrendering to death when, if she feels trapped or something, she's not just like, well, it's fine if I die. She's like, she didn't want to die like this. She took another breath, even though it felt like she was burning from the inside out. And I loved that little line in there.
Yeah. And then how Rowan just like immediately picks her up without question and like runs her back and like I figured like it doesn't say it, I don't think, in this chapter. I think it says it in a later one, but like that he was getting burned like holding her, like there was no way he wasn't at the moment. And how she just felt like, you know, like blasts of cold or like the cold air would come by, and I was just like, he is trying everything even in that moment to freeze his arms literally or like bring the cold air by her and like take care of her in that way. And I just thought that was really cute. I really like them.
And then he sees her scars. And we get a classic, who did this to you moment. So good.
Yes, for sure. And it's while she's in the bath and he's sitting there like with her trying to help cool her down. And it said, like an ebb and flow of the tide, the bath froze, then melted, slower each time. And each time the cold soaked into her a bit more, numbing her, urging her body to relax. Ice and fire, frost and embers, locked in a battle, pushing and pulling. They are perfect for each other. It's just so precious. I don't know. I just like, they complement each other so well. And I mean, like, not just like with their words, I mean, but like with their magic. I'm a fan. I'm fangirling.
I love that too. Except now that we're talking about it, all I can think about is New Girl, fire and ice.
Warm water. Oh, gosh.
Anyway, chapter 42, I love this moment from Rowan where he kind of storms off and he's flying to go see Maeve. And then he realizes, like, in his POV, he realizes he made a mistake. He thought about how it affected Selena, and he immediately turns back around to go make it right. Like, he truly has her best interest in mind. And I like the part that I highlighted. It literally just says that the thought didn't sit well with him. He veered back around, like, it was so immediate. Like, he just went to go fix it. And this, again, is like so different from her relationship with all these other characters and this just communication that they have. And instead of it being an entire book of like one conversation gone wrong, he's just fixing it immediately. But then he goes and he gets her and he brings her to his bed and he says, you're staying with me from now on, I die. And then he falls asleep holding her hand and he's still holding it to his chest when she wakes up, and I'm swooning so hard I want to cry. And then it says, something molten rushed through her, pouring over every crack and fracture still left gaping and open, not to hurt or mar, but to weld, to forge. And I love the wording there of forge, because it's like she's not just healing, she's like being made entirely new, and she just seems like she's becoming a completely new person, which is just so cool. And I just love that writing there from Sarah.
Well, and like, she's like, he's helping her become like yeah. that new person, like to be better and all of those things, which I just love for them.
Yeah.
For me, I struggled this whole time because it's like all so precious and cute and everything you just said, I'm feeling all the feels. But like the whole time in the back of my head, I was like, is she still naked? Like, she's still naked, right? She's just like, doesn't have any clothes on, right? And I don't think she does.
Technically, she didn't get dressed after her bath, but he did scoop her up in her little, like, blanket burrito. Like, it says he picked her up, like, blanket and all. And he just scooped her up.
Does it say burrito?
No, but it should. And then he takes her to his room. And then it says, like, she felt like the soft sheets. And he like, tucks her into the quilt, which I thought was really funny, too, because it just made me think. John kind of does that to himself in bed. He, like, makes a little cocoon where he's tucked in.
But her hand was still out for him to hold
but,
all
yeah,
night.
But her hand is out, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chapter 43. Again, I feel like this was such a huge moment for Selena. She's telling Rowan about this rage and like despair and hatred that she phrases it lives and breathes inside her, and that she feels like she's a monster, and that whenever she finally tells someone and opens up about those 2 days, you know, 10 years ago and what happened before and after, she says that monster is going to break loose and there will be no accounting for what I do. And even though she's not opening up about it here, it still feels like such a big deal that she's being totally honest with someone about the way she views herself, what she thinks about who she is. And he's his response is like a big oof after that, where he's saying like, but also I think you like to suffer. Like, he's totally calling her out for collecting scars and wanting proof of the sins she's atoning for or whatever. Like, but that's like, that was so honest. And for him, it's also like, he's admitting that he does the exact same thing. And so he's kind of meeting her exactly where she is in this moment. But what she's saying about like, the moment I talk about this, the monster's going to break loose. Does this feel like potential foreshadowing? Like, do you guys have any, do you think that this is going to happen at some point? What do you think is going to like trigger this finally? Or do you think she's kind of letting it build up for a different moment? Like, what do you think is the motivation for her not unpacking that now, I guess?
I thought it just like her killing calm that she goes into, and she just like kind of shuts out everything else, and she goes off on like whenever she was saving Kale from the rebels or whatever, like that moment, and she just didn't care. And it was just like just complete rage. And then it kind of ends with that happening with the Vogue at the very end of this chapter chunk, where she was saying like a monster to meet a monster. And that's also like her plan to like defeat the King of Otterland and stuff. So I definitely feel like she views herself that way. I feel like that's how she was trained to think of like how to kill and what she needed to be an assassin. And so she has to like work through that.
Interesting. Like that's the place she goes to in her head or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So whether or not she stays that way and uses it for good or whatever, or she works through the feelings and the emotions and however she got that way and ends up being able to like view her, like, obviously she's still going to be epic and she's because she's she, but like use it in like a positive way or views herself doing it in a positive way. But,
yeah. I just thought that was interesting because like she's been brave enough to be so vulnerable with Rowan about literally everything else, but not this. So it just like, I don't know, that felt important to me.
Yeah. So they're like talking and they're obviously having this conversation. I'm pretty sure it's in bed and he's holding her hand and that whole thing. And it said, at least if you're going to hell, he said, the vibrations in his chest rumbling against her, then we'll be there together. So first of all, just all the romance, but also just like, yeah, you were saying him meeting her there, like where she's at, and him understanding and saying that like she's not alone, I think is a big one too, because there's so much that she does feel alone, or that he left her like that whole moment, and he's saying like he is there with her. But also like the romance in me being like the vibrations in his chest rumbling against her. I'm like, oh, he's such a man. I'm a fan.
Well, this is another moment where they leave this crazy conversation on a lighter note, because doesn't she responds when he says like, then we'll be there together. And she's like, I feel bad for the death god already, or something like that. And they're just like joking with each other.
Yes.
But then her birthday arrives and it says her sole present was that Rowan left her alone for a few hours. And I was like, first of all, that kind of sounds like a dream.
Yes.
Not specifically John, but just as a mom. Yeah.
I was going to say, as a mom, that sounds wonderful.
Being alone for a few hours. And then he comes back with chocolates. And then just their banter and stuff is cute, where she's like, first chocolates on my birthday, now an actual compliment. Just dying at the banter.
Well, yeah, and it said he'd returned to Selena with chocolates since he'd claimed to be insulted that she considered his absence a proper birthday present. She tried to embrace him, but he would have none of that and told her as much. Still, the next time she used the bathing room, she'd snuck behind his chair at the work table and planted a great smack and kiss on his cheek. He'd so waved her cute. Off and wiped his face off with a snarl, but she had a suspicion that he'd let her get past his defenses. I was like, yeah, he had to have, because like he's literally like a 300-year-old badass. And so it's like there's no way she would have snuck up unless he wanted it to happen. I just thought that was cute. And then this chapter kind of ends and they have one of those another italics conversations. I eventually at some point in this chapter chunk stopped writing it down just because I was like, there's no way that this conversation, like they're talking in their minds. Like there's literally no way they're not, because it's like, it gets really specific later. It was started as just like, oh, he kind of seemed to look at me that way. And now it's like, they're full on having conversations and then move on and are just fine with it. But this one was just really cute with just like the banter and stuff. Where it said, his eyes narrowed and they had yet another wordless conversation, italics. The more you talk, the more I'm going to make you pay in the moment. She smiled slightly, italics. Apologies, master. I'm yours to instruct. And he just said, italics, brat. Their banter is so cute. And so they're 100% cute. Talking in their minds. And you can't convince me otherwise. So Abraxos and Manon are going to start talking into each other's minds. And Selena and Rowan are going to start talking to each other's minds. Okay, so chapter 45, it said, though she could have sworn she occasionally felt their magic playing together, her flame taunting his ice, his wind dancing amongst her embers. So first of all, freaking cutest thing ever. They're just like the best and I love them. But also, is this the whole like, how do you say it?
Karanam.
Karanam thing, where like, I think that is like officially like, I'm giving you my powers kind of a thing, but they are kind right. of like using like almost like giving it, they're not like physically using their magic out in the world where her ice is doing something in his,
yeah,
or her fire in his ice or whatever. Instead, it's more like,
it's like their magic is interacting or something. Yeah. yeah.
And so that's why it feels less like I am using my magic and we're like goofing off. Instead, it's more just like they're weirdly sharing some sort of bond of some sort. I don't know. I'm here for it though. John and I kind of touched on it earlier, but this is, you know, whenever she's having all this time with Rowan and all the things are great. And then all of a sudden she thinks about Kale and she has this dream about him, you know, about the brown eyed man and the empire across the sea. It said that she had to realize that she would never again lie next to Kale, not after what had happened. And that when she remembered that, sometimes it hurt to breathe. Are you gonna say anything, John?
Yes, because I'm so annoyed at this, because it's like, I'm reading this. As I'm reading this, I'm thinking like, why is she fretting over Kale so much? It's not like they were fawning over each other when she was ordered to Windland, right? Like it was a hard stop with Nehemia's death and like how poorly he handled that whole situation, which has been a little while ago. So like, why is she all bent out of shape? Like I would have much preferred that this sentiment be written for Dorian's sake as like, man, I miss my friend. Because that clearly wasn't like really going anywhere romantically. And I mean, especially with how she left it with Dorian, like she told him, I'll come back for you. And it's like, what the heck is that supposed to mean? Like, you know what I mean? So I don't know. It's just like, it was so weird. It's so weird that she's like so upset over Kale when it was like so clearly over.
I don't know. I just think of it like, I think she had love for Sam, but it was a different kind of love with her and Kale. Yeah. And it was also her literal first. And like, you never forget that one. And it's just like, I don't know. So there's some connection there to that too. I also don't really feel like they had like strong or good resolution to things. They just kind of like awkwardly ended things. She's also still really young.
Yeah, that's
true. I don't know.
Obviously, there was like a hard stop on their relationship, but it wasn't like, I don't know. Maybe it does feel like there wasn't any closure for her because it wasn't like her choice. And it's not like who he was fundamentally as a person technically changed. He like made a mistake and it cost her friend her life. So out of principle, like she's never going to be with him again. But like, I think she's still kind of torn there because it was her first love. And that's something that's really difficult to get over. It hasn't been that much time, really. Right. Like,
however long to get to the continent, however long she was just chilling, waiting for Rowan, however long to travel, however long
at
to train.
At this point, it's been probably at least a few months, if not several months.
Yeah, that's true. So, and it does seem like she's mostly over it, and then she has these moments. It's also probably easier to kind of romanticize that or feel like she misses him when he's not there.
True.
Because Rowan's the only person that she really has here. So I don't know if it's just like almost like a homesickness kind of a thing. I don't know. But she's obviously conflicted about it.
Yeah.
Well, and I think with Dorian, if we're bringing, like, because you said we wished that it was be for him, but like she did have time to recover from that relationship and have good friendship and leave on a good conversation to be like, I will come back for you. Like, this is whatever. And so like thinking of him, is it like hurt or something to work through? Probably necessarily as her feelings for Kale or whatever happened there. And obviously all the things that happened with Nehemia, maybe it's some of that.
Yeah. And she has no idea what he even thinks of her now because she told him who she was kind of cryptically. So like he didn't even technically know the last time she saw him. So.
And it'd be the first person and only person she's ever told that to that we know of. So that's also a big thing.
Even though he's going around telling everybody now.
I know, right? Yeah. I will say, though, I am appreciative of these like tiny sentences because I think if Selena was just off here doing whatever and hanging out with Rowan, but Kale's over here pining and like, I don't know. I just feel like even worse for him, like as a sad little puppy dog. He just like left
alone. Who cares? Who cares?
I do. I feel like really bad with this one again, only because you guys are like important history and things that matter. And I'm like, Rowan slung his shirt over his head to get at the weapon strapped beneath, revealing his broad back and muscled and scarred and glorious. Fine. Some very feminine, innate part of her appreciated that. And she didn't mind his half nakedness.
I will be the first one to say that that is just as important as any history or lore in this book.
Okay, good. Because I think so too.
Well, and in the same like POV, there was a part where she is wondering if like moving on physically would help her forget the whole Kale situation. And I was like, do it.
You won't know till you try.
Only one way to find out, girl.
Yeah, I would just love some more details on that moment, though. If that's the stuff that could be described better or more thoroughly, I'd appreciate it. But anyways. And then finally, she had said, if she felt like admitting it, she actually didn't have the faintest clue who the hell she was anymore. All she knew was that whatever and whoever climbed out of that abyss of despair and grief would not be the same person who plummeted it in. And maybe that was a good thing. And I was like, yes, I love to see the growth. I feel like that's exactly what needs to happen. Sometimes you do change as you things happen to you in life, and that's a totally okay thing to happen. Yeah, I'm hopeful for her.
We're welding. We're forging.
Things are happening. We're moving on. That moves us into chapter 47, where I believe she is now fighting with one of the creatures. I said wind was tearing at her face, her arms, her stomach, roaring her name. But there was eternity and calm in his eyes, a promise of such sweet darkness that she could not look away. So she was staring into the creature's eyes. But the whole time, wind was tearing at her face, her arms, her stomach, roaring her name. And it's like, it doesn't say that that's Rowan, but 100% that's Rowan, right? Like his magic and trying to like get her away from it and stuff. And I just like loved that description because I like brought stuff up like that with Throne of Glass because Elena had like wind and stuff like that happening at different times. So I don't know. I just thought it's cool that it's happening here too. But
that is cool.
And then it said, despite her incessant trembling, she hummed as she sharpened a symphony she'd gone to see performed in Rifthold every year until her enslavement, which again, love reading Assassin's Blade before this to know that she had gone with Sam and he went and got her the music. And so she's singing Sam's song and that's just extra precious. So I love that part. Oh, and then, sorry, I had another note. I was just like, oh my God. But this is when she and Rowan like trick the skinwalkers to go like meet with the Vaug or the monster. We don't really know what it is yet. And they have this whole like fight. And I kind of said this earlier, but like at this moment, I was like, do we know who even won the fight? And then in the next chapter, it talks about it. And it said that they thought the Skinwalker did, but there was no body. And so I was like, okay, if there's no body, the thing's probably still alive. Just don't trust it. Been tricked one too many a time with that one. And I was right. So they have this whole fight. It is interesting, though, because it does make it seem like the Skinwalkers like celebrate and have this whole moment, but they don't find a body. And so to me, because they knew they would take... They wanted to take her back alive to like, you know, do whatever and then take her skin off. And so it makes me think that maybe they like the thing like gave up kind of a vibes and they like took the body back to its camp. And then something happened since they didn't see it. Like they just hid up there. Because I was like, if the monster survived, why didn't it just be like, you're up there in the tree. I'm coming after you next. Instead, it was like they felt safe enough to leave because the Skinwalkers walked away. So it makes me think that maybe that battle happened somewhere else, not in that exact moment. So they're trying to like fortify the castle now, or like Mistward. They're like putting up all these traps down the road and like all the things. And it said, and should they wind up under siege, there was a secret tunnel leading out of the fortress. And I just read secret tunnel. And so I had to write that in there because I thought it was funny. And then it said, I just thought this was really interesting because it said the next afternoon, after washing her face and bandaging a burn on her forearm in Rowan's room, something else happened. And I just thought it was interesting that she could also be burned, because like later it talks about how she like she brings fire to her hand and she's like throwing it and she's holding a fire sword, but like somehow she has a burn on her arm or something. I don't know, that felt like really random to me.
I didn't catch that,
or but almost a mistake, but I don't know.
Well, there were some moments where it's talking about how she has to be intentional about her fire not burning someone, so I don't know if this was just like a loss of control in the moment kind of a thing. I didn't actually catch that it said that. I think when I read that, I was thinking they were bandaging Rowan's arm, but that's, I guess, not how that's written, because that was before. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah. That happens at,
Okay.
Never mind.
Moving on, I guess.
Moving along.
Okay. Anyway, so she leaves her room, or Rowan's room, and she like immediately feels like something is wrong, and she goes down, and this is like the most heartbreaking moment when it just said, no, the soldiers killed every slave in Calicola. Oh, yeah. And then a little bit later, once he got word of the uprising at Eelway, the King of Otterland sent two other legions north and none were spared in Endeavor.
And the fact that she like misinterpreted it at first, and he's like, no, that's... Not
yeah,
that
she was like, oh, so they like overcame and they're like free or something. And instead it was like she had a moment of hope and then it like was crushed. And that's just like awful. And especially because like she's literally leading up to it being like, I'm going to free them. And that's like some of her motivation to do things. Like that would be like her celebrating she killed the King of Otterland and like going back and saving these people. So it's just a lot. And then she immediately left and she started to basically just lash out. And she's just like fighting at the wall, basically the ward that like kept Mistward safe. And it said she fed her power into the invisible wall, begging the ancient stones to take it and to use it. The wards, as if sensing her intent, devoured her power whole, absorbing every last ember until it flickered, hungry for more. So she burned and burned and burned. I'm really hoping that this moment gets used later, like somehow, because we know that like the Volga are there and like the bad guys are getting in and stuff, that maybe like she somehow powered up those wards and they're not going to make it through or something's going to happen.
Everything she had.
Yeah, so that's what I'm hoping for. I guess that's a theory for later because I don't actually know if that will hold, but I'm hoping for it. But we switch to chapter 49, where it switches back to Rifthold with the King of Otterland, and he literally just like raises his glass to celebrate that this happened. It was just the way that he said it that just made me cringe more than the fact that, obviously it happened, that's awful, but like the way he said it, in almost like a joking way, where it said, forgive me, it seems the slaves in Calicola got it in their heads to start an uprising after Princess Nehemia's unfortunate death. We got it into our heads to not allow it.
Like, and he's like smiling when he says it.
Yeah. He is the literal worst. And then I felt really bad for Adian too, to have to say like, thank you, and like have that whole moment that he was beating himself up for later, which just shows into a little bit of his life. that he's had to live in this whole like double yeah. life and how awful things have been for him. So I don't mm-hmm. know. That is all just really rough. And then it yeah. leads into even more rough. And yeah. I was debating like just talking about it, but I wrote the whole thing here. I don't have to read the whole thing, but it is just talking about when the musicians and yes. they came out, like everyone was going to the theater, like extra, just because it was like things were so bad and awful. So they were just trying to get it out of their heads kind of a thing. So the theater yeah. is packed, first of all. And then for them to come out, and it said that the conductor raised his arms. It was not a symphony that filled the cavernous space. Instead, it was the Song of Ilwë, then the Song of Fenharo, and Melisande, and Taliesin, each nation that had been in the labor camps. And finally, not for pomp or triumph, but to mourn what they had become, they played the Song of Oderlin. So, first of all, that is intense and just like musically epic and at the same time just like gut-wrenching. And then they just like walked off stage, like nobody clapped, like it was just like yeah. nobody really knew what to do. They just like bowed and walked away. And then it yep. said the next morning, by royal decree, the theater was shut down. No one saw those musicians and their conductor again. And it's, I don't know, I just love how Sarah keeps giving us like these little glimpses of and like bringing us back to like the reality of the situation, yeah. like with the girl from Calicola or with Rena Goldsmith, or like, I don't yeah. know, just with like those little side moments and mm-hmm. stuff like this, that, you know, it isn't just Selena and Adian and Kale and Dorian, you know, like there is like a ton of people who are feeling this or willing to fight in the little ways that they can. And I really loved all of that part, but at yep. the same time, like you hate that part.
I had highlighted this entire section too, because it gave me chills, and I literally just got chills again as you were reading part of it. Like I love this because it is showing how it affects the culture of like literally everyone, again, not just mm-hmm. in the castle, but like even in real life, like moments in history. I wrote in my notes, like art is so important because these are the kinds of moments that everyone else is going to remember. Everyone outside yeah. of the castle, all the citizens of Oderlin, like these moments are so impactful in real life too. And I just think it's so cool how she incorporated that. Obviously devastating, but really cool how she incorporates yeah. that. These are just like cool moments of world building too, almost, because it's like, yeah. this is what's feeding into their history that's being written right now.
Well, and the people, like you said, like that's what people will remember. Obviously, everyone knows about what happened in Endeavour and Calicola, but they'll remember like that moment. And maybe yeah. it will like have some residual effect as far as other people wanting to start fighting back or seeing that they can do it, or they're not the only ones feeling that way, or whatever else needs to happen. But
yeah. All right. Chapter 50, we really just had a couple of highlights from this conversation because I'm still swooning over all of it. But mine was, this is from Rowan to Selena. So I am staying because you are needed and because I will follow you to whatever end.
Yeah, no, I love it. I know. And then it said, when she grasped the dagger, it weighed lighter than she remembered. Rowan looked into her eyes, into her very core of her, and said, "Fire heart." And that's like the part earlier in the book that made me cry when her mom was yeah. calling her that and stuff. And I think it was later that Selena even said, like, does he even know that that's what my mom called me? You know?
Yeah. But and that it means so much to her.
Yeah.
All right. 51.
Yay. Okay. So this is whenever she finally sees that the creature did not die. It just said, Selena started 3-3, not 2. And I was like, I called it because she didn't see the body. And obviously we've already talked about that, but like, yeah. I don't know. I'm just stressing out because we stopped not knowing the end of this fight. And so I'm saying all this thing like, man, those things are going to be hard to beat. But like, we're leaving Selena at a spot right now. So I'm a little stressed. But.
Yeah, that definitely was interesting, especially since Rowan and Selena like marked the sounds that they heard as the Skinwalkers being victorious. So like my initial thought in that was that maybe they thought they killed it, kind of like what you were saying. Maybe they thought they killed it, but at the same time, that doesn't really make any sense. So yeah, maybe they just like dragged it off and then, yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of weird.
I only think that because they had said to her, like, we're going to take you back alive, you know, kind of a thing. So like, maybe like doing that and they just maybe knocked it out or something and then took it back. And then
that's a good point.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. And then this is when she like kind of basically decides like she's going to go fight them by herself because that's smart. But she said this was the least she owed those murdered in Endeavor and Calicola, the least she could do after so long, a monster to destroy monsters. And this is like exactly what she had said was her plan to kill the King of Otterlin, or like what to do. Like, no one else has to be involved, just me, one monster to kill the monster. And so the fact that she like goes and does that. And I was really hoping she was coming out of that dark place, because she says that when she's the most depressed, literal seconds before she meets Rowan. I don't know. I thought we were going to be in a better place than that. And so I was really sad. I was really sad to see her say that and have that moment.
I know, but I mean, what we just talked about, how like she had this plan to go free all of those slaves and now they're all dead. So like,
yeah,
I mean, I could see it, but I just like, but and then I'm just heartbroken all over again, because in the same conversation, she calls herself the expendable one. Like, that's literally what she says to Rowan. And I just, that's a real bummer. Chapter 52, though, can we just talk about this whole fire sword situation? Oh, she like wills fire into the blade itself, which was so freaking cool. And then the creatures know the name of the blade. They like recognize it and they're like, Guldren, what are you doing?
Well, and they said that moment with like Guldren or whatever in the last chapter, so then I was like, what are they calling her? And it wasn't until this moment that it was like her sword, Guldren, that she put, and I was like, oh, the sword. Got it. But then it's like she finally like figures it all out and puts it together, and it was like, oh god, you are the Vog she breathed in the last podcast episode. If you go and watch it on YouTube, you will see Kyle like talking about how he thinks these things are Vog, which first of all, shout out to Kyle, holy cow, amazing. But I'm sitting there, and if you watch the video, I haven't actually seen it, so I'm guessing, but if you watch me, I'm like, no, this isn't it. No, this is not important. No, stop. This is not it. And I'm literally, and I texted Connor like earlier this week, like, Kyle keeps saying all these theories and I know he's wrong because these are the important things, not those things, like these things. And then Kyle is totally right. So good job, Kyle. So first of all, I guess the reason I didn't think they were Vog is because like in my head, I know that they like came and who did they like come with to make the witches?
Oh, with the Fae. They breeded with the Fae or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess in my head, they were going to be this like monster, but like a like good looking. Does that make sense? But like a monster, obviously like a bad guy, but like enough that people would want to like breed with, I guess. I don't know. I think that's why I thought that's why these couldn't be it, because these things were like monsters, not like attractive monsters.
They weren't hot monsters.
That sounds so shallow, but that is what I thought. So anyway, okay, so she's fighting them, she's having this epic battle, it's really really cool. And it said, far up the hill, as if they had come racing down from the mountains and had not stopped for food or water or sleep, were a towering man, a massive bird, and three of the largest predators she had ever seen. Oh, five. Yeah. In all, answering their friend's desperate call for aid.
Like, hell yes. Yeah.
It's the Furious Five from Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, I thought of it like the Lord of the Rings battle where they're like there and then like all of a sudden like Gandalf comes around the hill with like all those other guys.
Yeah, okay, nice. You know, clearly I was taking this way less seriously than you were. To be fair, I put my Kung Fu Panda comment at a slightly different part where it said, Rowan's friends did not hesitate as they raced for it. The wolves leading the way, the bird and Osprey close behind. It's like listing all the different animals.
That is definitely Kung Fu Panda.
Tiger, mantis.
I was thinking like, because they come down the hill and like the whole moment, but yes, for sure. And then it said, this is the Vog, the creature, took Aelin's face in its hands and her sword thudded to the ground, forgotten. Rowan was screaming as the creature pulled her into its arms as she stopped fighting, as her flames winked out and darkness swallowed her whole. Like, what? Like, what is happening? But like, I just don't understand. And I don't get an explanation here because we end in the very next chapter. So. Okay, let's finish out with chapter 53. It said, one of the claws severed clean through her long braid as it whipped around her. She did not fight as darkness swallowed her whole and dragged her down deep.
Girl got a haircut.
That's what I was saying. I was like, I know it's describing like how things are happening, but like literally chomp chomp. Like cutty chomp, cutty chomp. And took hair.
Cutty cutty. Snip snip.
Yeah, exactly. Cuddy Cuddy is from Gabby Cats. And the little craft one goes Cuddy Cuddy. But then Faye, our daughter Faye, will go around the house going Cuddy Cuddy. And it's the most like a 2-year-old with her little fingers making scissors. Cuddy Cuddy. It is terrifying. But and then she's like going through, she's like in the Vogue's mind. They're in her mind or whatever's happening. And it's just like literally the most intense like therapy session someone could have, like by immersion. Yeah. Like they are just like throwing it all at her and she's just going through it. And then that's where we stop. I don't know anything else.
I was going to try to write something here about like all the gut-wrenching moments in this chapter because there's so many things that it just like, it literally feels like someone's just punching you in the gut like over and over as you're reading this. But I couldn't come up with anything meaningful to say. I was just like speechless reading through this part. And I am genuinely so sorry about the stopping point. Speaking of abrupt stopping points, if you're watching this on YouTube, you're probably wondering why we all just magically changed our clothes. This is because we experienced a recording error with this episode and devastatingly, infuriatingly lost all of Kyle's audio track for the last half. We have spent literally all day today trying to figure out the best way to preserve as much of the original recording as possible. So that's what you just heard. And we are jumping in right here to fill in a few gaps and finish out this episode so you can get all of Kyle and Lauren's thoughts and theories. There were a few conversations that got lost in the recording. So we are starting with chapter 46.
Yes, in chapter 46, we were talking about the three towers that are made of obsidian that we just kind of learned about in this little spell. And I was wondering, because of the original clock tower that we know of, and there's like the cells that go down and around and around, and she finds the one, assumedly now, a Vogue or somebody who is being tested on or whatever was happening there. And so I didn't know if, like, how many cells would there be if that means there's that many Vogue, if that makes sense. And then I wrote this question, assuming Kyle would give me the answer. So,
and I did, and will again. It is 249 rooms. The first was like the first hallway was 99, and then it went down by a third each time. So like 99, 66, 33, and so on. I'm not sure if there was any significance there in the spiral. I mentioned in the episode we first read about it, about like it was Fibonacci's pattern, whatever. But I now think there might be some Norse mythology importance, since 9 is an important number in those beliefs. And they have worlds stacked on top of each other in their mythology, which sort of gives me the vibe of what's happening in these books. Because they always talk about, you know, coming into their world, going into theirs.
Fancy.
But yeah.
Ooh, so potentially, are you saying like 249 potentially times 3 if there's 3 clock towers? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. I guess that's what I was thinking. Or like if they're just trying to create this many whatever creatures that they are. I guess that's what we're going to.
747 of them.
Yeah, that's no problem. And then I also just pointed out that there was even more italics in this chapter. And I believe it was at this moment that I just stopped marking it down because it's happening way too many times. And it was just like literally every other note at this point. And I'm just convinced they're talking to each other in their minds, but only time will tell. Yes. And then finally, this is when Aelin is fighting one of the Vogue. Actually, it might be the first time she sees the Vogue. And it just kept saying, beneath his hood, she could only glimpse pale skin and sensual lips. I'm like, why do they keep using the word sensual here? And she uses it so many times to describe this. Stop it, John. She uses it so many times to describe the Vogue, and it is disgusting. I don't understand.
Yeah. I thought it later on, because she describes the spelling rancid and rotten, having long black nails. But then, like, that one random thing about them is like, well, they got real nice lips, though. I'm like, okay, why are we caring about that right now? They're going to kill you.
I even Googled the word just to, like, make sure I understood the definition. I was like, am I thinking this is a different meaning? Why are we attaching it to this creature? But no, it's definitely what I thought it meant. And I don't know why it's attached to this creature, but okay.
Sure.
Sure.
You keep using word. I do not think it means what you think it means.
Exactly.
I wrote for chapter 50, the quote, "I claim you, Rowan Whitethorn. I don't care what you say and how much you protest. I claim you as my friend," which is very sweet, but also friend-zoned. So it kind of sucks for Rowan to be friend-zoned like that.
Is it that easy, though? Can you just claim someone like that? Like, can I claim Rowan Whitethorn?
I claim you, Connor.
I claim you as my friend.
Friend-zoned.
What? That'd be a very nice, fantastical way, though, to friend zone someone if you need to. Like, I That's claim so you as my friend. They'd be like, oh, okay.
And
I
nothing guess. More.
That's what, like, adult friendships are like, though, because you have to be like, we're friends now. Like, gotta make it clear. Like, that's how adult friendships work.
That is what you did with me.
I'm kind of, yeah.
That's kind of what she did with me as an extrovert to introvert relationship. She was like, you are mine now, and I will be taking you everywhere.
You're welcome, everyone who's listening, or we wouldn't be here now.
We claim you as our friends too.
Yes. Okay, chapter 52. This is when we like finally learn that they are actually the Vogue. She says, oh gods, you are the Vogue. I think it was in the last episode or maybe the one before that, Kyle like brought up that it could potentially be Vogue. And the whole time I was like, no, that's not it. Like, that could be your theory, but that's not my theory. And I was so convinced that he was wrong. And I even texted Connor about it where I was like, Kyle's so convinced that this is, and I'm like, no, that's wrong. It's this, this, and this. And he was right. So I'm owning it. He was right.
What was that? And what did we
louder
learn?
Please into the
microphone. We have that on recording. I could just replay that as many times as I want.
And I'll never say it again. Okay. And then this is also when the Vogue is like taking the life, I think, out of Aelin. And it just said the creature took Aelin's face into its hands and her sword thudded to the ground, forgotten. Rowan was screaming as the creature pulled her into its arms as she stopped fighting, as her flames winked out and darkness swallowed her whole. And I was just like, wait, what is happening? Like,
he's
just like,
chomped her up.
He's just gone. Like, because like the flame is what she's always like referenced herself as, and so if her like light goes out, that's like she's gone, which is awful.
She gone. So,
it's like Charmander loses the light on his tail.
What? That's exactly where she got this from too.
Yep. Probably. I thought it was inspired by the Indigo Lee. I wrote that I felt like this is the first time, sort of in response to that, we get a very visceral reaction from Rowan to her being in pain or in danger, less than just like, he flinched or, he came towards me to help. Like, he was screaming her name, had to be held back by his bros sort of situation.
Hold me back, bro.
Just like that.
But yeah, I thought it was interesting that it gave a feeling of even more of a connection between them than just, you know, mentor, mentee, friend zone vibes.
He's trying to get out the friend zone. Yeah,
he did.
It takes a lot of work to get out of the friend zone. Yelling and screaming.
That's the advice that people in the friend zone need. Have you tried yelling and screaming at her if she's friend zoned you? Worked for Rowan.
Have you
Rowan.
Tried biting her?
I don't know why you act like it's so hard to get out of the friend zone, man.
So any thoughts and theories as we wrap up?
Yes. So I definitely think those spiders are still really mad and that they're going to come back. I just feel like spiders can't just, I don't know. I just hope they have like a net or some, or I guess a web would be what it is, to like catch themselves or I don't know, they land on their feet or something. I don't know. Cause I've tried to kill spiders in my house and they're hard to get sometimes. And this is a ginormous one. So I don't know. So I feel like they're going to come back at some point. Unfortunately, I have absolutely no idea how Selena is going to get out of her current situation since her light just went out. And that's where we're at with that. But I'm super excited to keep reading. I don't really want to make like a theory on it, though, because we're just going to like keep reading and like turn the page and it will be fine. I'm super interested in like going back and learning more about her time in Terrasen, because I feel like we're starting to get like little glimpses of that. She's like starting to understand like another voice or another person that was there. Yeah. So I'm really interested in that. But yeah, that's, I don't really want to make theories because I just feel like we're at like an epic moment where we're just going to like learn the rest of it in like two Hopefully. Seconds, but we just stopped at a very abrupt point, which is fine.
Sorry. Yes.
I just had that. I think however she gets out of it will involve her drop of water affinity, as they called it. It's not been super involved yet, but it has been suspiciously mentioned a few times, which is usually what I keep track of, is the things that are suspiciously mentioned and then dropped for like two books because they eventually come back. But otherwise, I think my past theories still hold true. They've not come true yet, but I think they're on the way.
So for the cry counter, we are still at 2 Lauren, 2 Connor.
Yeah.
I think that's where it's at, unless the boys are hiding something.
It's all tied up. Got to have a cry off.
You need a tiebreaker. A cry breaker.
Cry breaker, cry yeah. Breaker. That's good.
That was really good.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, that is a wrap on episode 11. Join us for our next episode where we will be discussing the end of Heir of Fire, chapters 54 to 68.
In the meantime, please rate, review, subscribe, and follow wherever you're listening. Visit our website for merch and other resources. We now have bookmarks, including 2 different designs for the tandem reading guide for A Throne of Glass. We'll be starting the tandem read on this podcast in September, so make sure you order your bookmark soon if you are reading along with us. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter. And lastly, check out our Patreon for all the community and perks that we have going on. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, Sponsored Jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You eat well, you work out, but did you know 99% of Americans are still mineral deficient? That's where Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder comes in. It's your daily foundation for better mood, natural energy, immune support, and nervous system balance. Formulated from nature and backed by science, it's a simple habit that makes a big impact. Because your body doesn't make minerals, and today's food and water don't supply enough, with Concentrace, you'll feel the difference. Go to TraceMinerals.com and start with minerals. Start with Concentrace.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.